Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
John's not doing okay.
Oh, sorry about that.
He's distraught over the election.
There are many of us who are distraught over the election. My way of dealing with it is just not thinking about it.
Exactly. Why get upset about things you can't control, right?
Well, you know what? I was going to CNN and Politico all the time and taking a look at those and the 538, which completely lied to me. And so now I just look at Newsarama and watch Supergirl.
Perfect.
I'm just looking for meaning in life and affirmation that I am not crazy.
No, and actually the thing that's really interesting about it is now we know anything can happen anytime.
Yeah, like the planet killing asteroid that's probably hurtling toward us right now.
Right, the one that we're pretty sure is gonna miss us.
Yeah.
Yes. But we're not here to talk about politics, right?
No, let's talk about his thing about 1,000 ways to die, because that's, you know.
Well, it's kind of like politics.
I know. Speaking of the Trump election, 1,000 ways to die.
All right.
I was actually told by my sister-in-law yesterday, my in-laws came, and she said that watching election night was like watching September 11th.
Okay. Knowing what I know now, let's be honest here. So I'm an independent, but I probably read/watch about 4 hours of politics a day. I know more about it than just about anybody I've ever talked to. Dave is a real conservative, a fiscal conservative.
I'm a libertarian,
though. He's one of the sane ones.
I'm a libertarian, not a Republican, though. There is a
difference. But you're conservative, and you're one of the same ones. You're like one of the ones that used to exist like 40 years ago before they all went extinct and were taken over by these things that inhabit the Republican Party now.
We've gotten to a point in this country where there are two major platforms, and we automatically associate beliefs with people who belong to either of those platforms. And that's part of the problem, you know. I mean, yes, Trump did a lot of horrible things during the election, but, you know, to sit there and say every conservative or every Republican is racist and every Republican...
Did I say that? No.
No, you didn't say that, but a lot of people think that. And that's, and so when he wins the election and you see the outlash, it's like the outrage of all these people. It's like, okay, maybe we've gone too far down the rabbit hole.
I think part of the problem is the fact that we've all joined teams.
Yes.
So it's like, the media. My sports team, you know?
And the only thing that our teams are listening to are the media that reaffirm our own suppositions. We're not, there's no like, it used to be you had to read one of the main newspapers and they were all about ferreting out the truth and made mistakes once in a while and you'd have opinion pieces. But for the most part, everybody was getting the same news, which was basically not a viewpoint per se, but a list of facts. Now, you go online, and it's like, oh, I'm on Facebook. All my friends are liberals, and I've turned off all conservative ones, so the only news I'm getting is liberal. Same thing on the other side. I'm listening to Breitbart and Red State and whatever, and, oh, you know, God, Obama's an actual demon and from hell. And, no, seriously, that's what some of them believe. I had to do some research because I had a cousin challenge me to do – it wasn't Red State. It was – it was some other podcast or something, and I'm listening to him, and the first half hour I listened to it, I got Hillary is literally a demon from hell, and 9/11 was a setup. this is what my parents get. So
okay,
that's not what we're talking about.
No.
I am sorry.
Oh no, you're fine. It's, you know what? It's, you can't not talk about it now. I think that no matter what side anyone is on, everybody is stunned. Right.
Yeah.
And it was funny because, you know, Trump went to visit Obama in the White House. Yeah. And there are all those photos of him And he looked like he looked like the entire world was caving in on him. Trump did. And you know, the news media was trying to make it look like, oh, look, they don't like each other. Look at this. Look at the way he's sitting. And I'm watching. I'm like, no, this guy is shocked and he's scared out of his head because he just got some piece of information that nobody else knows. And he doesn't want the responsibility, but now he's got it, you know?
You know, that's exactly the look that Bush had on his face when he was sitting in front of those third grade reading that book when 9/11 happened.
It was, you know what? I never even thought about that, but it's 100% true.
Well, exactly. And one thing that I have said is I might not have agreed with everything that Obama has done, but I still respect him, you know, because he's been in a difficult position, you know, leader of the free world and all that. Trump, I don't see him as somebody who can survive even 4 years doing the job. I see him walking away from it, actually.
The betting pool is he's not going to walk away. It's just that since he has absolutely no filter whatsoever, that he's going to go and do something. Either his kids are going to do something, because right now they're asking for clearance for national security, and they're running a business for their father who is who's going to be president of the United States. So either they're going to do something fiscally illegal, or he's just going to start tweeting state secrets because he gets the intelligence now. He's just going like, hey, everybody, did you know that we have UFOs?
You notice that between Friday and Saturday, someone shut him down on Twitter.
Yes.
He tweeted that thing about the protesters, and he's like, very unfair. Yep. And then like 9 hours later, he's like, isn't it great that we live in a country where people protest? I think that it's going to be one of two things, and it's not going to be anything in the middle. He's either going to be the greatest president who ever lived, or he's going to like point the car towards the cliff and like step on the gas, and we're all going down. It's one or the other. There's no in between.
Yeah. Oh, I saw a meme on Facebook. It was a picture of George W. Bush on one side and Trump on the other, and on the Bush side it said, Everybody thinks I'm the worst president ever in the history of the United States. And Trump says, hold my beer.
There you go. Well, he's not in yet. We'll see what happens. You know, he's surprised us through this entire year, and there's every chance in the world he could surprise us again.
I hold the same hope of him surprising me in a good way as I do winning the lottery tomorrow.
No, you don't know. Are you playing the lottery?
Oh, yeah. I'm playing more now.
It could happen.
It's up to $293 million, the Powerball.
The next drawing is Wednesday, right? I am buying tickets up. Well, I'll be resurrecting the pool at work then.
So where are you guys located? I saw that you went to the New York convention, and you went to one of the other ones in the country, and I'm drawing a blank on which one it was. But where are you?
Philly.
I'm sitting in a room.
Okay.
It's kind of small. It's got a door.
We're in the Philadelphia area. So, okay. Yeah. So the last convention before that, the three conventions we normally go to is Philadelphia Wizard, then there's the Great Philadelphia Comic Con, and then of course New York. This was the first year John went to New York. Went a little crazy.
Yeah, but I it went good crazy.
Yes.
Well, Wizard World doesn't have a New York, do they?
No. I actually used to work for Wizard World, not for the company directly, but I'm friends with the former guy who would coordinate the volunteers, and he would put me in charge of like different areas, and they tried to do a New York show twice, but they don't draw enough of a crowd to justify the cost of doing a show in New York.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's
know that that New York convention had another convention going on the same weekend one year, and I actually thought that was Wizard World. Maybe I was wrong about that.
They tried to one year do the same year weekend as San Diego.
Okay.
And then they moved theirs, you know, like a weekend earlier, and it was a total flop. And that was actually the last New York one they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be hard because, I mean, like you said, Dave, they're going to like knock down the building that Artist Alley is in and build another huge building just for Comic-Con.
Yes.
And I can't imagine it. I mean, there's like literally no oxygen left for another convention to exist in New York at the same time.
Isn't it at the Javits Center?
Yes. Yeah. Have you been there before?
Yeah, I was there in 2008, actually.
Okay. So off of the Javits Center, there's like the annex building where they have Artist Alley usually.
Uh-huh.
that they're talking about now is knocking that building down and expanding the whole Javits Center out that way. So it would be a much bigger convention center to make New York Comic Con bigger, a bigger show. But they said that's going to take like two.
I would think that they would do it not just for the Comic Con, though. That not to go back to how we started the conversation. Isn't that where Hillary Clinton had her victory party?
Yes. Yeah, it's going to take a lot to wash the sad out of the place next year.
Well, it's going to be, you know, one of the things that I've been doing is, you know, I have this book with the ghost stories in Chicago, none of which are real. But I've kind of gone around and I've talked to all these ghost hunters and they talk about these places that have this this paranormal experience and these emotions and these influences that are there. And I assume that the Javits Center will probably be like that. It'll be like a haunted building.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what else. Being from Philly, I don't know what else they do at the Javits. But, you know, I mean, they're the New York Comic Con rivals San Diego. They're very close number wise.
Mm.
And yeah, it'll be interesting to see because the other issue is, I think you're kind of alluding at it is it's a bubble, right? Eventually it's going to burst and these conventions are going to, you know, suffer once people stop going to the movie. I don't think so. You don't think so?
No, I don't. And I'll tell you why. I live in Chicago, mm-hmm. and we've had a show here for decades and decades and decades, and then Chicago Comic Con and Wizard World took it over. And a couple of years ago, or I guess it was like 6 years ago now, the people who were doing the New York Con started a convention in Chicago called C2E2.
Yes.
And all the comic companies pulled out of Wizard World. And they decided to go to C2E2 instead, which is kind of, you know, you would think they would go to both, because C2E2 in the spring and then Wizard World is in the is in the summer later on, like in August. And Wizard World is still going.
Yeah.
Even no comic companies are there. Now, the first year that they did this, I walked in and the first thing I saw was like Captain Sisko from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. And Data was there, and he was like looking at me as I was going through a back issue bin, and it was like really, really creepy. But you know, they're finding a way to do it. And the thing that I found with that show in particular, I was there this year, and it was the first year that I was behind a table at Artist Alley as opposed to just being a spectator. And I started going to the show when it was the Chicago Comic Con back in 1987, and every year. Since I've been going, it's been a different animal. And this year it was different too. And so the sense that I got was what Wizard is doing is they're adjusting it year to year to whatever they think needs to happen or whatever the temperature is. And this year I couldn't make heads or tails out of it this year, but it was interesting. You know, it was, I kind of like that because it's ever evolving. And I think if that's the case, people will still continue to go to these things. People were going before the movie. So I don't really see why they would stop going.
Okay.
Yeah. Besides, the movies aren't going to end for like, I mean, I'm sure Marvel's already thinking about like phase 5 through 10, and we'll always have the DC movies to make fun of.
Mm-hmm. I actually like the DC movie, to be honest. Sorry.
Begone, unclean.
Oh no.
Hello?
No, I'm still here.
Oh. we've had this conversation. They have some redeeming qualities. I think it's, you know.
Yeah, they didn't mess with the logos. That's about it.
Okay. So, I mean, I think the biggest criticism the movies get is that, you know, they're not as upbeat and joyful as the Marvel movies. What do you think of that kind of comparison?
I think that I don't think they quite knew what kind of a tone they were going to approach with this stuff. And, yeah, they're not as upbeat as the Marvel films, but the TV shows are. Which yes. are really interesting.
Yeah.
You're
kind of schizo.
Yeah, it's, you know what, it's an interesting dynamic, and sometimes too much of that doesn't work. I've been trying to watch Legends of Tomorrow, and I just can't do it. It's too much. It's part of the issue that I have with it is, you know, they're doing all this time traveling stuff and they're being super politically correct. So, you know, the team is in World War II and, you know, and you've got a woman leading the team and you have an African-American guy there.
Oh, yeah.
And that's okay. I don't have a problem with that. The issue that I have is that they're pretending like there was no prejudice then. I mean, they'll throw a comment out there, but it's not like Quantum Leap, you know, where Quantum Leap took those issues and faced them dead on. And I think that when you try to, for lack of a better way to put it, when you like whitewash that stuff and you push it to the back and you pretend it didn't happen and everyone's happy and smiling or whatever, you actually disrespect the people who fought for their rights in the 60s. And you take all of that away. And that's the biggest issue I have with, you know, they're treating the show like it's the old JLI that Keith Giffen and J. Mark DeMatteis did. And to a certain degree, I can kind of see that and I can get on board with it. But I think that they just go a little too far. It's not as clever. You know, it's like the characters are acting stupid for the sake of acting stupid, and it's just not working for me.
The characters still, like, they still jump out of character when they need a plot device, mm-hmm. you know? But you know, to that point, they did the Civil War one with the zombies, and they got a little heavy on the slavery aspect.
Did they?
Yeah,
I missed that one. I watched the one with the 1950s, and I was like, "Oh my god, this is the worst thing I've ever seen." And then I just watched the one with the JSA, and I was actually pretty disappointed with that too.
I think their writing's hit or miss. I of the four that I watch, that's the one that I'll be on the computer while that's playing in the background. I'll still listen to it, but the others I actually actively watch. Check out the one with the Civil War episode with the zombies, because that was towards the end you mentioned Quantum Leap and there were echoes of that,
right? Interesting. And I mean, it's funny because on the other shows we're getting like super, I don't know if either of you watched Supergirl tonight. I was watching it a little bit while I was setting up, and
well, somebody scheduled a podcast, you know, at like 9. I had to make sure I was prepared.
Episodes behind, actually, but that's all right.
Well, I mean, it's not a big spoiler. I have to say who the villain was. It was Parasite, and it's like, and I thought they did a really good job with him visually and the story they used for the show. And it's like, you know, we're getting episodes like now with that, with Supergirl. Flash has been excellent, I think, from day one. Green Arrow's is really strong, and right, I don't think Legends knows what kind of show it wants to be.
Right.
Except Ensemble, they keep switching out people.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
Well, that's okay.
Hmm?
I said that's okay.
Yeah, yeah, it can be. Although I was really sorry to see Captain Cold go. I mean, what's the actor's name? Damn it, it slipped my mind again. But he did a really good job, and the character was really freaking interesting. It's one of the few times they let a character evolve,
mm-hmm.
and you're not seeing that a lot with the writing because they're not taking the time and they're doing the old thing where, yeah, they may have an overarching bad guy and whatever, but most of the episodes are, they start out, they find a problem, they end it with, they fix it, and everything goes back to normal.
Right.
You know, there's no real evolution. Not that I want too much of that, but still, it's like, you know, if it's too static, then it just becomes a monster of the week thing.
Right. Well, I thought that season premiere, I thought was pretty good.
Yeah, that was good.
I mean, they did the comedy thing, and it was goofy and all of that. But I was, you know, when the Reverse Flash showed up at the end, I was like, oh my god, it's getting good. And then I saw the next episode, and I'm like, oh my god, no, it's not.
But what didn't you like about the JSA one? I'm curious.
The entire scene in the nightclub in Paris. Actually, I just I decided my wife and I were watching it, and at one point I'm like, turn it off. And part of it is the fact that the JSA is one of my favorite superhero teams.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of the Justice Society going way back, and it wasn't that the team members were disrespected at all. Although I do think that Smallville did a much better job with that team than Legends of Tomorrow did.
Oh, Stargirl too.
Yeah, and even with Stargirl. But I just felt like, you know, it was kind of meandering along, and then you had this scene in this nightclub and Professor Stein is singing and Jax kind of gets an offhanded racial comment, but not really. And it was just, you know, there's no way he would have been able to walk into a no way it ever would have been allowed to happen. And and that right there kind of like killed it. Not that I want to see anything happen to these characters, but you have to you have to be true to the era.
Yeah, right. Well, that's funny because Timeless, that it's another show that's on. I don't know if either of you have seen it, but they're handling time travel too, and they went back to just before Lincoln got shot, and they handled it pretty well with how African Americans were treated back then, mm-hmm. and it didn't get brutal, but it was definitely pointed.
Yeah, I do agree with that scene with the French nightclub, and. Mm-hmm. And when Victor Garber started singing, I'm like, oh, was this just an excuse to have him sing on the show?
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Absolutely it was.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, that kind of ruined it. You're right, that scene ruined it.
It's funny because I decided to watch it today because I'm really looking forward to the upcoming invasion thing that they're
about. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm watching it, and I've got it on, and we get to the French nightclub part, and I'm like, no, I just skipped right over it because I remembered all of a sudden where this was going. And I'm like, I'm not watching this. So I just skipped up to I'm watching it on the CW website. So I've got the commercials, everything else in it. And I got to that part and I'm like, I'll watch another commercial.
Oh, that's bad.
Well, could be worse.
So
the show that shall not be named.
So let's talk a little bit about you. Sure. For those who haven't figured it out yet, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and we're here with Scott Larson, illustrator, creator. So you've worked on such books as Kong, King of Skull Island, A Thousand Ways to Die, as John mentioned, The Saint, mm-hmm. Femme Force, Victoria's Secret Service.
Which sounds awesome. I have to pick that up.
And you have your new book, Visitations, coming out. So the question we usually kind of like to start off with, to get to know somebody is, was this something you always wanted to do? Did you always want to be a comic book artist?
Yeah, it is. I actually grew up in a family of artists.
Oh, okay.
And my dad was, my dad fought in World War II. I'm much younger than people that, have parents from the World War II era, mm-hmm. but he fought in World War II and he came out of the army and he wanted to be a commercial illustrator. And, you know, kind of like a Norman Rockwell type. And he never did it. But I was around artwork all growing up. And he used to, you know, he used to draw. He used to paint. He used to sculpt. He would make Star Wars toys for us from scratch. So he would, like, take pictures of, like, the skiff from Return of the Jedi. And then he would just create it. And so it was a really neat way to grow up. And my brother makes movies. I have a sister who's an artist as well. And I wanted to do something creative, and I always liked comic books. And I grew up on the old Batman TV show. And so I was reading comics, and I was an artist, and I always wanted to draw them. I just thought it would be a lot of fun.
Cool. And so you mentioned Batman. So you were a DC kid, or?
Yeah, you know what? I became a little bit of a Marvel guy when back in 1984 when they brought the Venom costume into the Spider-Man series.
Okay.
And so I own a complete collection of Amazing Spider-Man, which is took me years and years and years to compile. But I still stick with Spider-Man no matter what. And so I'm still reading that, but I like the DC stuff. I can't help it. I don't know what it is that appeals to me about it. I'm not saying that like it's a bad thing, but it's so DC and Marvel are so different because Marvel is like reality. And DC is like these gods. And, you know, everybody likes the Super Friends. Everybody in my age group who grew up with it, I can't stand the Super Friends. And I can't stand that whole era of comics, that whole 1970s era of comics, with the exception of a couple little things. And to be fair, I was like 5 years old when that stuff was coming out. But it's just, I've tried to read it since, and it's just, it's like a sinkhole. It's bleh. But I really liked what DC did when they did Crisis on Infinite Earths. And I liked how there was this generational aspect to it and how all of a sudden you started to get these heroes that were untried, or they were kind of like me. You know, Wally West was the Flash and he was trying to fill in his uncle's footsteps. And it was really great. And I've always just kind of stuck with it since then. I always liked the JSA.
You must really like the new Justice League Action Go Yay thing.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it, but I did like Brave and the Bold.
Okay.
Yeah, Brave and the Bold. Brave and the Bold was different. I mean, I'm a Bruce Timm fan, but the Brave and the Bold actually held my interest, and some of the characterizations. It wasn't the more realistic, more interpersonal stuff. It was actually really entertaining, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were watching an episode last night, and you know, there's Aquaman, and everything is outrageous.
Aquaman's awesome.
You know, and he's trying to tell the story, and everyone else is cutting him off. Yeah. And my wife looks at me, and she goes, "I hope he's like this in the movie." And I'm like, "I don't think he's gonna be like this in the movie." Oh, but he has to be.
You know what? That would have made me really more interested in seeing the Justice League movie. Because that would have been a perfect balance. It would have been a perfect balance of Batman and Superman.
Yes, but we're getting the badass version of Aquaman. And
but yeah. You know, they did that. They did that new 52 version of the Justice League in cartoon form. And when they brought him in, when they brought Aquaman in, I don't know if you guys saw this or not. He did say outrageous at one
point. Okay.
When was this? What?
They did Throne of Atlantis as in cartoon.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep.
And they had introduced Aquaman to this new version of the cartoons. And at one point he hits something and it goes into on the ground or something like that. And he just goes outrageous. It was great.
I think I've got that right up here somewhere. Okay. I have to make sure I see every DC animated movie there is. It's my job.
Go ahead. So then, what was your first, I'll say, professional job in comics?
The first professional job that I had was for a company called Capstone Press, and I believe they're in Minnesota, and I did the life story of Marie Curie.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it was right after I had gone to a regular university, and then I went to an art school afterwards. And it was about a year after I graduated from the art school, and it was one of the scariest moments of my life. Was getting that project because all I thought was I'm going to screw it up. And it was right around Christmas time and I got in the script for it. And it was literally the day before Christmas Eve. And I went to bed the night before and I woke up at like 3 a.m. and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to screw this up. I know it. And I got up and started working on it at like 3:30 a.m. 2 days before Christmas, just because I was so scared of it.
Oh, wow. And Did you just get this job just because you were an artist, or did you have an interest in science and Madame Curie?
No, I didn't. You know, I had heard the name, and I think I saw a version of them on The Simpsons. Past that, I didn't really. I do like history a lot, but I never really thought too much about Marie Curie and her husband. What had happened was, I have a friend who works for Marvel in DC, Andrew Peepoy, who is an inker, and he's been around for the past 20 years or so. And I was on the phone with him, and he's always mentioning these like jobs that he has to turn down or whatever. And he's like, oh yeah, these people wanted me to work on this, but I don't have time. And then he just kind of moved on the conversation. And I'm like, well, Andrew, what's the job? And then he tells me what it is. And then he just kind of moves on. And I'm like, who are they looking for to do it? Oh, well, blah, blah, blah. And then he moves on. And I said, can I send them my samples? He's like, oh, what? Are you interested? I'm like, yeah. And I had actually, to backtrack just a little bit, the first professional job I got on my own was a Marie Curie job. I had been Andrew Peepoy's assistant for a number of years, so I got to fill in the blacks on his inks mm-hmm. for all kinds of different things. I did it for like X-Force and Robin and all these you know, real professional jobs.
Cool.
So what power did she get after she was exposed to radiation?
She got the power of death.
Yes.
Wow.
Because that's what happens in real life.
So yeah. So it was the DC universe then.
It could have been. The movie universe.
So, actually, I did have a question too, because I noticed that you worked on Femme Force.
Uh huh.
And that was for AC Comics that's based out of Florida, right?
Right.
Okay. Because a friend of mine, that was his first professional comic he worked on. Mm-hmm. And that was the. Oh my God. My brain just go blank. You know who I'm talking about, John. Greg. Greg Horn.
Oh my God, you're gonna cut that part out, right?
No, I won't cut that out because he doesn't listen. And it's funny because now I don't know how you feel about working on FemForce, but he doesn't usually talk about it.
You know what? Actually, it's funny because I was at Artist Alley at C2E2 next to Greg Horn.
Oh, okay.
And nice. He was a super nice guy.
Yes.
And I actually gave him a copy of Visitations, and then he came back the next day. He's like, oh, I really like this. FemForce was it was a great project to work on. And for me in particular, I was doing two things at once. I was doing all this stuff for Marcosia, and I had done the they had this book called Heretic, which never saw the light of day that I had worked on. Mm-hmm. And then they had Kong, King of Skull Island. And when I was working on King of Skull Island, what had happened was I had like a month and a half for the first issue or something like that, and I was only doing pencils. And they're based in England. And I get a phone call from the owner, this guy named Harry Marcos, and he has like this English accent, and he's, you know, he's calling me mate and all kinds of stuff like that. And he calls me up and he says, well, you know, we have a problem, mate. We've lost our artist for half of the next issue. And the way it was supposed to work was I was supposed to do issue 3 and issue 5. Oh, well, our artist can only do half of the next issue. Can you do the rest? And I'm like, sure. And he goes, well, you know, we don't have time to have somebody else ink it, mate. Can you do the inks? I'm like, sure. He's like, can you have it done for me next week? And I'm like, sure. And I'm like, what? You know, in my head, I'm like, no way. So I hacked it out and I got it done. And then the issue after that was the same situation, only it was like 30 pages. And it's like, okay, well, we're giving you a little bit more time. Now you have two. And so I hacked that out too. I have a full-time job. I'm working on this stuff part-time. And the pay was fairly low. Not that that really mattered to me. But I wanted to get it done, and they had this horrible deadline. And I picked up some. I work for an advertising illustration studio in Chicago. I picked up some really bad habits from the illustrators there, and one of the habits is just get stuff done. Just get it done. Don't worry about what it looks like. And when I started working on FemForce stuff, I was in this like speed mode where it's like I have to get stuff done. I have to get stuff done. I have to get stuff done. And so I started out kind of like that. And then with King of Kong, King of Skull Island, it's based on a book by this guy named Joe DeVito. And Joe DeVito is this fantastic illustrator. And they asked if for the trade paperback I could redraw it. And I told him, yeah. And Joe decided to play art director. He started giving me a real hard time on everything. He's like, well, you have to change this figure. And I'm like, Joe, the figure is like an inch and a half on the page. No one's going to know the difference, whether you can see his nipples, you know, on his chest. And he's, no, you have to do it. And he really pounded it into me that I needed to slow down. And while I was working on both the Kong thing and FemForce stuff that was coming in. And it really gave me the opportunity to slow down with the FemForce stuff. And so, you know, I was kind of taught one thing from one project, and I implemented it on the other one. And I did FemForce stuff for a number of years, and I had a great time because I think I really grew as an illustrator. Nothing but good things to say about that aspect of it.
Cool. No, that's actually, you know, that's a good thing to hear. Back up a little bit. You said you worked on a book called Heretic, but it never saw the light of day.
Yeah.
That wasn't based on the game, was it?
No, it's based on a novel.
Okay.
And it was from Marcosia, and they had done the first three issues, and then something happened. They were just going to compile it all in a trade paperback, and I did the next three issues, and they just, I think they lost the licensing for it. I think that they got distracted with other stuff, and so it just kind of died on the vine there, which was a good thing because the artwork. My artwork.
Besides that aspect of it, is that something that might be, I think I've heard stuff like that before, but I don't think we've ever had a guest talk about it before. Is that something that happens in the comic book industry a lot? Like you work on three issues of a book and then all of a sudden, you know, they're never going to be released.
It does for people who are not working for Marvel and DC, and even people who work for Marvel and DC, that stuff happens. But yes, it happens a lot. And it's actually one of the reasons why I decided to just go off and do my own thing, because I figured that if anyone was going to screw up the publishing aspect of it, it was going to be me. You know, I didn't, I was kind of coming in and doing like the second half of this issue that someone else had drawn, which was fine. You know, it's always good to kind of get your feet wet and to do other things and to take a look at what other illustrators are doing. But, you know, it got old. And, you know, I had talked about earlier how I was a little kid and I was watching Batman and I always wanted to draw comics. And it's not that this was taking the magic of that away, but it certainly wasn't adding to it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that that was one of the reasons why I did that. You know, I had mentioned Victoria's Secret Service, or you mentioned it to me. It was in my biography. That hasn't seen.
Oh, okay.
So and, I can't pick it up.
No, well, maybe. I got a message a couple of weeks ago saying that they were finally going to publish it. And part of the issue with that, it's a four-issue miniseries. Blue Water Productions was putting it out, and I think they changed their name like twice since I worked on it. I actually worked on it like a good, what year is it now? I worked on it like 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I had drawn the first three issues of the four issue series. And it was supposed to come out. It was solicited in the summer of 2012, I want to say. And then they never got it colored.
Hmm.
So it's been kind of sitting there and sitting there and sitting there for all this time. And that's something else. You know, you work on something and you spend all of this time, you put a lot of effort in on it.
Right.
And to have it not be published, it's maddening.
Do you ever get to go back to that well at one point or another? Do you like just keep it on the side, or is this like a rights problem at that point?
It depends on where I am. So they're going to... I did the first three issues. They still have the fourth one out. And they're claiming that the first issue is coming out at the end of the month. Now, I haven't seen any solicitations for it, so I'm not exactly apt to trust it. But when the time comes, if the stuff has been published, and if I like what the colorist did and stuff like that, then maybe I will go back and finish the fourth issue. Because they did kind of like tell me that they'd like me to finish it up. But I do have my own thing now too, and you know, clearly that wasn't necessarily a priority for them, so I don't know if it should be a priority for me either.
Right. No, I definitely get that. I mean, 5-6 years waiting for something to happen is
yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, so then I guess that brings us to Visitations. Tell us about the book.
Which aspect do you want to hear about?
Where'd the idea come from?
It's funny. I've done a number of different like interviews and talks and everything, and I always want to do something new for them, but unfortunately this story doesn't change. So any of my many fans who follow me from podcasts to like talks and stuff are just going to hear the same story again. But what happened was I had found out that I was at work one day and I was really bored, and I started doing this Google search on family members' names. And I did one on my grandfather. My grandfather was, he had left our family during the Depression. And this was like 1937. And he went off and he became a vagrant until he died in 1969. I was born in 1970. I never knew him. I never knew, very few people in my family, my brothers and sisters, had ever met him. But I put his name into this Google search and this thread popped up. And it's like, you know, who's looking for this guy who's been dead for 40 something years? And he was out of sight like a good 30 years before that. And it ended up being a family member from Sweden trying to find out what happened to all the relatives that left there in the 1800s and came to America.
Oh, wow.
And so I started I contacted this person and I went back and forth with him and talked about a whole bunch of different things. He basically gave me this information about the family that I didn't know before. No one else in the family knew it either. And it was how my great-great-grandparents came over from Sweden to Chicago in 1869. And the Great Chicago Fire was actually in 1871. So they were here if you don't know what the Great Chicago Fire was, there was this fire in the 1800s that basically swept through the city and destroyed everything.
Right.
And they were here for that, and I didn't realize that myself. And so that was really interesting. And then I found out that they were buried in the cemetery called Graceland Cemetery. Graceland is where the founding fathers of Chicago are buried. So Marshall Field is buried there. Daniel Burnham, who was this architect, is buried there. All kinds of different people. And I went over there and I was really taken aback by some of the monuments in this place, because it's this old Victorian cemetery and there's like all kinds of like statues and things like that. And I walked in, the first thing I saw was this statue that looked like the Spectre.
Okay. And
ooh.
It was like, it was really wild. And I had walked around the place and I was impressed with what the place looked like. And it was around this time of year. It was like a week after Halloween and it was kind of creepy, you know, and it was that slight chill in the air and the leaves were all on the ground and there were like people sitting on tombs eating sandwiches. And it was just, it was very odd. And when I actually found my ancestors' tombs, their graves, I found out that they didn't have a tombstone. And so I went to the cemetery, and the cemetery is privately owned. And most of the cemeteries, not only in Chicago but throughout the country, are owned by a company called Dignity Memorial. And they basically, and this is going off my story a little bit, but it is interesting to know. Mm-hmm. Dignity Memorial is this place that is this huge conglomeration of companies that follow the trends. And so they bought all these cemeteries in Chicago and throughout the country because they knew all the baby boomers were going to die. And so okay. They're waiting to like make all of this money.
Oh, wow.
But Graceland is privately owned. They'll let anybody in the Dignity, but Graceland is privately owned. They don't want anybody in. And I went over to them and I said, well, what do I have to do in order to get headstones for my relatives? And they gave me like this gigantic list. And there was one place that I was able to go to order these things. And it was this the Chicago company that has been around since my ancestors were here back in the 1860s. And so I went over and I started talking to the person who was running the place. He's a very nice person. She's like, oh yeah, we'll cut you a deal. Don't worry. Everything'll be great. And she talked to me for like 2 hours and, very nice girl. And so, I leave there and I became Facebook friends with her and she started posting all this stuff on her Facebook. Mm-hmm. And one of them was like this thing where you could like just be buried in the ground and sprout into a tree later on, and the 13th.
Okay.
Yeah, it was real morbid. It was really strange. And one of them was the 13 creepiest memorials in the world. And there were different things in there. One was actually one of the memorials I saw in Graceland, which was this real creepy little girl who there's a story behind it where she apparently disappears and people have seen her frolicking around the cemetery. And if you see this statue, it's like, how could it not be haunted? It's really, really creepy. But there are some other ones. There was one of this one in Europe where this person is laying down and he's holding this face. And I thought this article was really interesting. So and it was one of those internet things like, oh, the 10 things you didn't know about President Obama or whatever, one of those things.
Right.
And I pass it along to my sister who likes ghost stuff and all that. And she writes back, you're weird. Why did you send me this? And I'm like, not my fault. She posted on her Facebook page. I thought you'd like it. But the combination of that article and me walking through Graceland Cemetery had some kind of effect on my subconscious or something, because I went to bed one night and when I got up the next day, the plot for the first issue was in my head. And so the characters are all based on monuments I either saw in Graceland or were in that article. And so I took the story, and I have a friend of mine named Len Stusky, and Len used to write the JSA for DC many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. And I've been friends with him for years, and I took him this plot and I said, well, what do you think? And I had drawn out thumbnails, and he said, oh, this is really interesting. He goes, who's this character? And I'm like, I don't know, this thing came Dream, why should I know? He goes, okay, well, this character, you know, died during the Chicago fire. Who's this character? I don't know. It came to me in a dream. Okay, well, this is this who this character is. So he kind of like gave me this background on all the characters. I'm like, oh, hey, I can make this character this. He's like, well, it's your story. Do whatever you want. So he actually helped a great deal. And so I decided that that I'd make a series out of it. And so it's basically the way I describe the series is it is the history of Chicago is seen through the eyes of the residents of the city's oldest cemetery. And so you get to see these characters, and they're almost like a ghost Justice League. And okay. One of the things I'm doing with it is did you guys read Alpha Flight when John Byrne was working on it?
Oh, wow. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was.
I may have read one or two. I remember it. I know I've got a couple downstairs, but I don't know. Go ahead. What was it like?
One of the things he did was he had the first issue where everybody like fought this like menace. And then for the whole next year, it was just individual issues where it focused on one character. And I thought that that would be a really great idea to introduce the readers to my character. So I think I've got like 8 stories planned out for the first series. And the first series is the turn of the century. And then after that, I'm going to skip ahead 20 years and I'm going to go into like the Prohibition era. And since it's Chicago, you get to see Al Capone and maybe the Untouchables will be in there and all kinds of really interesting things. And then I'm going to go forward to like World War II. And the atomic bomb was actually developed at the University of Chicago. And so I'm going to do a little bit with that. And then as I go further, it gets foggier in my head because I really haven't planned out the entire thing. However, I would love to get up to at least the election of Barack Obama because it was a huge deal for the city here. And it depends on how long I live. I'm starting to realize that this is a massive undertaking and it's taking me 10 times longer than I had originally wanted. But I would like to get a day or as close as possible.
Right. And then you get to the election of Trump and everyone's sad. But
well, you know what? We do have right in the middle of the city, Trump came and built his own version of Chicago's Trump Tower.
Oh really?
And it's an absolute gorgeous building. It adds to the skyline. It's a really cool building. But a couple of years ago he slapped his name on it. So So he took this like really nice building, and that now every time I walk by it all the time, and now all I see is Trump. But I'm definitely throwing that building, especially now. I was going to anyway because I liked it, but now I'll throw it in with the name and everything else.
Cool. So do you have issue one finished or?
Yes. Did I sent you guys issue?
I know. I was just trying to set you up so you could let people know where you were with them.
Oh. What did you read it?
No, I actually have not. I've looked at it, and okay. I do love your art style, but I haven't had a chance to actually read it.
Okay, that's all right. okay.
Full disclosure. My daughter actually got married last weekend, so I've been extremely busy with all of that. So. Oh, yes, I did tell you that. Yeah.
And I'm going through the opposite, so.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay.
So you have, and like you said, you have the first, I guess, 3 or 4 plotted out, and issue one's finished. So what is your plans to get it out to people?
All right, well, my great marketing, which made sense to me at the time, and actually I think it still does. The first issue is available to anybody for and digital only. I do have printed copies that I'm selling at convention and talks and like that. But I'm excited about the story. It's one of those things where I don't necessarily consider myself a writer, and I'm working on the second issue now, and I'm totally George Lucasing it to where it's
like, oh, no. Oh, hey,
this I don't even need to explain that. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Don't they tell writers not to do that though? I mean, that's like the worst thing you can do is to continually second guess yourself and continue to modify. At one point or another, you have to give up and just release.
Yeah, well, I'm modifying as I'm going, so I haven't seen the line yet. So if I'd seen the finish line and went back and did it, that would be one thing. But I'm still kind of working on it. But the third issue, I know exactly. What. But so the first issue is available for anyone for free. All anyone has to do is email me. Can I give my...
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The email address that I am using is visitationscomicbook@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And it's... How many pages is it? Oh, you guys haven't read it. It's like 28 pages. It's free. I'm interested in what people's opinion of it is. And then...
I got 37 pages, but...
Oh, is it? Okay, well, that's... Yep. I mean, what better bargain is there for 37 for no cost?
No, and the artwork is beautiful. And and we've got a headless guy right in the front, right in the first few pages, so that's cool.
Yeah, and he's based on a monument. I really wanted to put the monuments in the book, but mm-hmm. I was concerned about that because, you know, besides the fact that you're dealing with cemeteries and it's people who, you know, people who actually lived, and mm-hmm. you're kind of using this thing as, you know, this is my own personal promotion thing for myself. I don't really want to disrespect them for that reason. But the other thing is with Graceland Cemetery here in Chicago, because there are so many people, famous people buried there, because it's a private cemetery, I don't want trouble by showing pictures of their stuff. So I have done that on my Facebook page and my Instagram page, and I think I did it on my Twitter page as well. But and anyone who goes to any of those, and those all have the same address, I believe. They're all Scott J. Larson Art or Scott Larson Illustration or something like that. They're different ones for different pages. But that stuff is all there.
Yep. Yeah, I see that on page like 30 or something, 34. The what is it again? Scott Larson Illustration and Scott J. Larson Art from Twitter.
Right, and I believe my Instagram is Scott J. Larson. Actually, I can find out right now. Hold on one sec. So the second issue was actually funded through one of those really pesky crowdfunder things, and you know I don't believe in those. Yeah, it's Scott J. Larson Art on Instagram. I don't believe in crowdfunders, but I decided to like throw it out there anyway because I think people overdo them, and so I wanted to do a one-time only crowdfunder, and it was really, really, really hard.
How do you think they overdo them though?
Everybody's doing crowdfunders. Everybody's doing Patreon, and I think there's only so many times you can ask, you know, a crowd for money. And if you're getting it from this person and this person and this person and this person, I know that for myself, I've contributed to several crowdfunders for comic artists and for other things. And after a while, it's like, I just can't do it anymore.
Do they get anything for it? Because I know like I'm actually on Patreon for two different places, two different YouTubers, but that's because they're constantly putting out new content, and mm-hmm. I get alerts from them about them being online live, and so I get more than my money's worth for like $6 a month. And these guys have been putting out content for almost a decade now. But for Kickstarter, I guess it's kind of different. If I fund this comic book, I'm putting out volume two, fund this comic book,
right?
How do you? I mean, is that what you're seeing with a lot of them? They're just trying to fund every episode or every issue?
I think
issue?
There's a lot of that, yeah. And then, you know, and then there are the projects that are kind of like, I don't know, but I'm going to give you money anyway because I know you. You know, it's just mm-hmm. one of those. It just never really. But one of the things that I did do was I used, this is terrible, which crowdfunder? Oh, I did Indiegogo. And Indiegogo has this thing where if you get whatever funds there are no matter what. But if you meet your goal or surpass your goal, you can keep the page up there forever, and people can keep contributing should they want to. So the crowdfunder for issue two of Visitations actually ended in March, and I still get people buying it, everyone. So that's pretty neat. And it's a really good system. So the thing with issue two that I'm doing is, with all these books, I want them to be as different as possible. And so issue two, I've got it to where it's reader interactive. So it starts out basically as a regular comic book story, and then it starts going into double page spreads. And the issue is called The Great Balloon Disaster. And part of the spoiler on this is the balloons are going to pop. They're going to fall to their death. It's like this this balloon race thing. And what's going on in the book is as you're reading it, as you get to each page, you have to turn the book. And so my plan is to have the reader kind of like turn it in circles over and over and over as like the character is spinning out of control and falling to their death. And it just seemed like a real interesting way to do something.
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, that's one of the things I love about, you know, art and artists when they have a different way to look at something. And that's definitely, yeah. I mean, just the idea that you just said, I can picture it in my head. And I'm like, that's a really cool idea, doing something different like that.
Now, I didn't know if we were doing a voice call today or a video call. So I actually had what I had here, and I was going to show you. As if it was a video call, so sorry about that.
You can take a picture of it. We can put it next to the podcast on our webpage.
Oh, okay, I'll do that.
Yeah, yeah. That'll be great. So,
At one point, I want to do one of the issues is going to be a pop up book.
Oh, cool. Dear.
But I don't think I always wanted to do that, and I'm like, oh my god, there's no way I'm going to publish this. And there isn't, but I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to, like, construct the pop-up things and make the reader cut it out and, like, put it together. It was going to be really annoying for them, but it'll be cool by the time it's all done.
Supply your own real axe in real blood.
There you go.
Oh, man.
So a question I have. You grew up, said you love the JSA, Batman, DC. Yeah, this kind of takes a realm into... horror comics.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something else that's always interested you, or like?
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
It was, you know, it's kind of funny. I don't know how I arrived at this. And I got to tell you that the biggest audience I have for this book so far are morticians.
Okay.
And ghost hunters.
Hunters?
Ghost hunters.
Oh, ghost. Yeah. Oh, no. Okay.
It's you know what, I just went to there was this Chicago ghost dance that took place in October, and it was actually, it's a real funny story about this. It was at this place called the Willowbrook Ballroom, which is this real famous it's famous for a number of different haunting stories, but we were there and like a week later it burnt down. Oh, which is really, really strange. It was like, wow. But I met all these ghost hunters I didn't even real. And
they're out there.
Oh, they're really out. They're very interesting people. And my wife and I were watching that new Ghostbusters, and I'm like, God, is this what they're doing? You know, like, is this what their lives are like? I mean, that looks kind of fun. I've met a lot of people in my life, and I've met politicians, I've met artists, I work with artists and scientists and everything. The ghost hunters are like the nicest people I've ever met in my life. They're really, really nice.
Oh, wow. Is that because no one believes them?
I don't know. I think that part of the reason why they're as nice as they are, they're as friendly as they are, and it doesn't mean that they don't step on each other's toes or anything like that,
right?
But that they all get along. But I think part of it is they're doing it, you know, it's not their day job because they never get paid for it, but they love it and they're doing it because it interests them. And I think that's, you know, if you're going to do something in life, that's what you need to follow, whatever, you know, to quote Joseph Campbell, follow your bliss, do what you think is fun.
Right. No, I mean, that's why we do the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We think this is fun for some reason.
Yeah.
I mean, good time.
Cool. Cool. So,
So you wanted to ask about why I did this as a horror comic?
Yeah.
Well, part of it was just, you know, I mentioned walking around the cemetery and I thought it was really interesting. I was really, you know, especially after the Victoria's Secret Service thing, I really wanted to do something on my own. And there are a couple of other incidents that happened like right after that. Which was just like, okay, I can't have someone else touching my work. I can't be doing this. I can't be waiting. I can't be. And I really wanted to do something. I didn't know what to do. And my sister was, my sister was doing this art book, and she entered this contest on Facebook to like try to win $1,000 or something for she was doing a crowdfunder at the time as well. And she had this realistic piece of artwork, and it lost to somebody who did this cartoon drawing with a skull on it. Hmm. And I was talking to her, and I'm like, Linda, It's because skulls sell. People like skulls. People like scary stuff. And that kind of stuck in my mind, too. So when everything kind of came together, it's like, oh, this is perfect. I can throw a skull in there. People love that. I can do cemeteries. I can do history. I can do this. So so that's kind of where it came from.
Cool. I mean, I can't, without reading it, again, I can't judge it one way or the other, but the art is really good. So
read it when you have a chance and shoot me an email. Let me know what you think.
I definitely will.
I'm halfway through it already.
You haven't listened to this conversation at all, have you?
Conversation? What? No, I just, actually, I'd be really interested to see the Victoria's Secret Service, but you know,
it's you know what, when I have a chance, I can send the pages for that too.
That's sad. It's really sad to hear that happens more often than you'd think.
Well, you're dealing with, you know, with I don't know about the bigger companies, but I do know there's like tons of pages that end up in drawers, and I know that back in the 80s, George Perez had drawn a bunch of pages for an Avengers JLA team up, which yes, never saw the light of day. I think Rob Liefeld owns.
Oh boy.
I've heard of the book, but I don't know who owns the pages, but yeah.
Yeah, Liefeld owns them. Oh, and cool. He's owned them for decades. I think he bought them when he actually had money. And and it's just that that stuff happens. You know, there's always projects that come up and then you're like, gee, whatever happened to that? You know, that sounded really cool. And I know that I had mentioned Len Straczynski earlier. He had done he did this thing called Ultra Force, or it was the Ultra Universe. It was a bunch of people from DC and Marvel like split off around the same time that the Image Era started, right? And they like formed their own little company with Malibu, mm-hmm. And Marvel ended up taking the company over, and then all the characters just got shuffled off into a closet because Marvel would have to pay them money in order to publish them. So, which they don't want to do, but he had done this thing called Prototype, which was kind of an enjoyable series. It was sort of an Iron Man type of thing. And I got all the issues and I read them real recently, and I get to the ending of the series and there's like no ending to it. But then there's like a next issue thing, advertisement. And then there's like, this is where the series is going to go. It's going to be a mini series. It's going to be this and this and this. And I called him up. I'm like, Len, whatever happened? He's like, oh yeah, we just never finished. I'm like, okay. Like, there's 30 issues here. How does this thing end? He's like, oh, I don't remember.
How as a creator, can you get that far and not finish it? I mean,
I think that with a lot of this stuff, there's two aspects to it. You know, there's the creation aspect of it. And, you know, it's like, wow, this is me. I'm putting myself out there, blah, 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 blah. But then there's also the aspect where it becomes a job. And if you're a freelancer, especially, jobs die all the time. And that's just the way it goes. So I know that, you know, if it's something that you're absolutely, it's always percolating in your mind. For another example, to go back to Len Straczynski, he did the Justice Society, and DC cut the series short at issue 10. And this was back in like 1992. And I know he had the rest of them planned out, and he always talks about it. He's like, oh, this is where it was going to go. I'm really upset that they didn't do this, blah, 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 blah. And it's like years ago, but he loved that so much that right. He didn't want to see it continue. With something like Prototype, I don't think he cared. And so something goes by the wayside, you get busy with other stuff. It's like, eh. And I kind of felt that way about the Victoria's Secret Service thing too. It was, I had started it, I was working on it, but once it was starting to get to the point where I didn't see it continuing, it's like, well, who cares? Right. You know, it's not my life's work.
Yes, but John cares.
Okay.
I like the weird and the neat ideas that come out of, you know, all these people, all these guests that we have on the show. It's, you know, and to hear stuff like this, that maybe there's a secret stash of creativity and awesomeness that each one of them has in their basement somewhere.
Oh, it's true. It's true. For the most part, that stash really isn't awesome. And it's one of those things where it's like, God, I don't ever. And I can definitely say that for Heretic. I look at that stuff and I grin. The Victoria's Secret Service stuff was a little bit different because it was further on in my career, and I was pretty happy with most of the stuff I was doing. But there's stuff in there too where it's just like, geez.
Right. No, I mean that's true. And I mean, I think back to we had a couple of documentary filmmakers were doing a special on Charlton Comics.
Uh huh.
And they talked to a lot of different creators. I can't remember who they said they were talking to, and they had found a bunch of old. First they were talking about a bunch of old stuff they had found from Charlton, but then they found a bunch of they were talking about they had found all this old stuff from DC where there was like an old drawing. I can't remember who had done it. Who created the Joker?
Oh, that was Jerry Robinson.
Robinson, ooh. Yeah. There was a page that was drawn that kind of connected Robin's and the Joker's origin. And as far as it had never been published, you know. So as far as people know, that was the original idea, and I guess DC rejected it, and we got the origins that we know. But, you know, like, there's stuff like that that's out there.
Sure.
You know?
Well, it's not just with comics, it's us too.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Yeah.
So you're talking about failed pilots and stuff for TV, or...?
Well, one of the there was a show in the 1980s that I loved, and it was called War of the Worlds.
Oh, I know that one.
Oh, you do?
Yes, I remember it.
The only other person besides me who knows that show.
Oh God! Well, see, this is my specialty. They had the aliens in the 30-gallon drums sometimes.
Yeah. And then for the second season, they went into this this kind of like Max Headroom kind of a future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's really interesting because I watched the show from the day it started to the day it ended, and there was this total disconnect between the second season. The first season was done by these guys who started out with Star Trek: The Next Generation, and then Paramount, who was the company behind the show, didn't like what they were doing, and they took it away from them, and they gave it to this guy who was the producer and the creator of Friday the 13th, the series.
Oh, and I remember that one too. And those two styles did not match.
Well, no, they didn't. But what this guy did was he had this idea that he was gonna, you know, he was gonna make it real science fiction-y, and he had these, it was gonna be dangerous and scary and everything else. And it was the changes between the two series were jarring. They're super jarring when it started. But they took the most popular character and they killed him off, and because for a number of different reasons, and there were like reasons they gave for that, reasons for this, and blah 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 blah, and fans like hated what they did, and it's universally accepted that the second season was terrible, even though I liked it a lot, and I'm always reading stuff, and I came across this article, and the show ended in 1990. And I came across this article 3 months ago, maybe 6 months ago, and it was like this article that was written and run in one of those British sci-fi magazines, like back in 2001, and they told all the things that went wrong with the second series and what they really wanted to do and why they couldn't do it. And I'm reading, I'm like, oh my God, this would have been so cool. And I can't share this with anyone because no one knows the series.
You can share with me? Damn it. Yeah, I remember all these weird things from back then. That's
I'm actually part of one of the characters in Visitations is kind of like the characters on the Friday the 13th the series show, because he's going after these cursed objects.
Okay. Is that the one that was saying everybody's here at the party?
Or, I'm sorry?
One of the pages that I got stuck on is like all these monsters walking up this guy, and this guy's looking and going, good evening, everyone. So please, you're able to join the party.
Yes, yes. And he's actually, you know, he's kind of the leader, and he's got a really scene in the second issue. But yeah, he's kind of like going after like different things. And it's kind of a tip of the hat to the Friday, because it, you know, the series, the whole premise was they were going after these cursed objects, and they had them in this vault, and you know, we never saw what would happen if they were all released, which would have been cool if they had done that, but it was a neat premise, and it's like, if something's good, take it, do something.
Yeah, you know, if they released all the objects, it would be the second coming of Gozer.
Hey,
well, they They did do something with it. They relaunched it years later as Warehouse 3.
Yeah, I heard about that. I haven't seen that. Is that any good?
Well, it's been off the air for a couple of years now.
Oh, has it?
Yeah.
But it's well worth going back. It was an excellent series. It's really funny. There's a series called The Librarians, and Warehouse 13 was based on, I think, the original premise of The Librarians. But they couldn't get the rights to it or something, so they did Warehouse 13. And then when that finished, they started The Librarians, which is from the original source material. And they're both really good series. I don't think Librarians is finished yet. I think they got another season coming. I'd have to check. But it's definitely the whole series of Warehouse 13 is well worth watching. And the funny thing is there's some crossovers with Eureka.
Right.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, both those series were very good, and they both held up pretty well too.
Well, the Warehouse 13 was really it's been within the last decade, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
It only ended like years ago, I think.
Okay,
that sounds about right.
Yeah, because the two seasons of Librarians since then. I measure by series. But they've Cursed Objects, the whole nine yards. It was pretty good. That's what you got based on here.
It ended in 2014, actually. So there you go.
Okay, that was real recent.
Yes. So, getting kind of near the end here. So, one of the anything else that you're working on besides Visitations?
That's it right now.
Okay.
It's taking up a great deal of time, but it's also a lot of fun. You know, it's one of those, and it's like I said. I'm happy to send free digital copies of the first issue to anyone who wants to read.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely live in one of the right cities, I think, to be to inspire a story like that, you know?
Yeah, there isn't a lot done in Chicago as far as comics are concerned. I know that they tried to have the Blue Beetle from Chicago, but that didn't really work out too well. I think they just threw him in New York after a while. I don't think there's been a whole lot of Philadelphia stuff either, though.
No.
Besides, Chicago is held by here, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, it is. But you know what? It's funny because I've read those books. I know the places he's talking about. And actually, his grave was in Graceland. Do you remember where they gave him the grave?
Yeah. What's her name was holding it for him.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't. How far have you finished that series? Or as far as they've gotten?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I'm waiting for the next one.
I think that when he became the White Knight, I didn't finish that book, not for any reason, like, oh, this is terrible, but I just never finished it. And has there been more after that? I think there was like one more after that, right?
After White Knight, there have been a couple.
After?
Yeah, you're missing some of the best parts, I think.
Or where he was the Winter.
Winter Knight. Well, yeah.
That was 2013.
Right. Roald, what's the last one?
Jesus, I have to look this up now. Because he went on and decided to start another series, the bastard. But we love you, we love you, Butcher. We'll have you on anytime.
Well, he's got a number of different series, doesn't he? Didn't he do like some kind of pirate thing?
Well, that was the new one.
Oh, okay.
And he had the
Codex Alera.
Yeah, he had that. The first one that he had was
So it was Cold Days was where he was the Winter Knight.
Right.
And then Skin Game was the last one.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I'm a book and a half. Yeah. You know, I was listening to the audio and the guy who was reading them was, what's his face from, was it from Buffy?
Yeah. It was Spike.
Right.
James Marsden.
Right. But then the one right before the Cold Days one, for some reason he couldn't read that. So they brought the guy in who played Lionel Luthor on Smallville. Which was like really it didn't quite it's like the words were right but the was wrong. It was really bizarre.
And Changes was a really bizarre, you know, that was the one where he wasn't a typical Dresden book.
No, it was like a bunch of little short stories dealing with the other characters.
Well, because he was dead and he was moving. Well, he was technically dead and he was moving around. And this was a book where everything changed and started the build up for his three book Armageddon, like books 20, 21, and 22 or something like that.
Right.
Okay.
But
Pop the Skull is still around, right?
Yep. He's got a baby.
What?
You'll have to read to find out what I mean by that. It's not what you think, but it's close.
Don't, no spoilers.
No spoilers. But yeah, one of the greatest series is ever written, as far as I'm concerned.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Wow, that was an odd day.
sorry.
I was just getting at, you know, it's a great city. Yeah, like you said, there's not a lot of comics based in it, but it's a city with a lot of history.
Yeah.
A lot of ghost stories in Chicago. Mainly, I think a lot of them related to the Great Chicago Fire.
There's a lot of different, you know, since I'm hanging out with all these ghost hunters, now I'm actually getting the real stories.
Okay.
But I haven't heard a whole, there's one from the Chicago Fire, really creepy. And have you guys been to Chicago at all?
No.
No, I haven't.
No, actually, no, I went through there on my way to Seattle one. I think that was a hub there.
Well, that counts.
Okay.
You're here a week. Right in the middle of in downtown, there's this building that's the Water Tower of Chicago, and it's one of the only buildings to survive the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually so going back to the Dresden book, you know, where in the Cold Days book, where he was like he was going through some nexus and he ended up downtown.
Yep.
He appeared like right before the Water Tower. Just to give you a little place of where this was.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It was a building across the street.
It's really cool when writers do that, though, when, you know, you can actually follow where their character is going. And I guess that's part of why, like, Marvel is a little bit more popular sometimes than DC is because, you know, okay, this person's Gotham, this person's Metropolis, but then, you know, you watch the Spider-Man thing, it's, oh, look, New York, there it is. You know, you walk by, you know exactly where Avengers Tower actually is in New York. Right. I think it's on the Sears Tower, but
anyway.
That's really interesting, and I do like when people do that. The Dresden books, I thought they felt like a phony Chicago, to be honest. It didn't really feel like it was Chicago to me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything about Chicago, and it seemed like he knew what he was talking about, but you're a denizen.
Right. Well, there's a book called The Time Traveler's Wife, which is a really bad movie.
Yes.
It was, yeah, the movie's horrible, but the book, if you're interested in Chicago, it's almost like the book is a character, or the city's is a character. The book was described as a love letter to Chicago, and it was kind of fun. One of my first reviews for Visitations actually said that about my book. I was like, oh, great, this is what I wanted. But The Time Traveler's Wife, it's a good book. It's a really good, and the movie butchered it. But the book is worth reading, and especially if you're in Chicago, which you guys aren't, but anyone who lives in Chicago knows exactly where everything is. And there was a point where the character like drove past my house, and I'm like, okay. Whoa,
neat.
So yeah, it was. But real quick about the Water Tower. So the Water Tower is one of the only to survive the fire, and it's like this brick building. And when the fire was raging through the city, the guy, the attendant, actually saw it coming, and he was like, oh my god, I'm gonna die. And so he apparently went up to the tower of it, and he hung himself.
Oh.
And people still see his body swinging back and forth there now.
Okay. So
the police, well, they should take that down.
What's that? No, they cut him down. They should take it down. Not really. But the police have been called because there's a body there, or they'll see it. They'll see it through the window, and they'll go, and there's nothing there. But people still see it.
That's creepy.
I bet you hang out with the ghost people. You've heard a lot about the Warrens too, right?
No, what is it?
The Warrens? They're the ones that was it that the movie Insidious? I think it was based on their stories. They were ghost hunters up in New England for a long time.
Actually, it's interesting because one of my new ghost hunter friends is someone who grew up in Maryland.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they were. It was Ed Warren and Lorraine Warren, and I actually crossed paths with them about 20 years ago. But they were really really big, and you know they called themselves demonologists. It was they were some of the most famous ones actually that I know of.
Interesting. So did they end up like Ralph and Sue Dibney as like phantom ghost detectives?
They go around and investigate. I don't know the Dibneys, so
that's the Elongated Man and his wife from DC.
Oh, Dibney, okay.
Never mind.
No. I should have known that. I'm like thinking ghost hunters. I don't know. I did any ghosts. They went around investigating and you know, supposedly debunking some things and other things, saying this is real, and that's where you got the Insidious movies from.
Huh.
Those are, you know, quote unquote, based on true events.
Well, you know, at the ghost conference, one of the people who lived through the Amityville Horror was.
Oh, okay.
So that was interesting. I mean, he was a kid at the time. He said that it was nothing like the movie, especially since the house is still there and there are no windows broken in or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounded like there were all kinds of like weird things attached to that it had nothing to do with any kind of coherent, like, straight line of a story.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the original story that I heard was there was a family that moved in. There was a murder that took place in the house, and then a family moved in not that long afterwards, and like mysteriously moved out in the middle of the night. You know, and
he was a member of that family.
Oh, okay, right, and then of course there's not a lot of detail that's ever really been released, so it gets blown. You know how these things,
right.
Urban legends build and build and build, and then someone makes a movie, and it's like, you know, the house is telling you to get out, the walls are bleeding.
And the next thing you know, you're in the middle of a Simpsons cartoon.
Exactly. Yeah. Come on, walls bleed. No, I don't feel like it. Come on, just bleed.
So one of the questions that we usually like to wrap up on, when we have a guest on, is how do you measure success?
Really? I thought you were going to ask me what I was reading now. You know, it's basically just a matter of being happy to. I take it that it was just kind of a blanket statement. It wasn't just, it was just kind of like, how do you measure success in the business? How do you measure
it? Right. It's your interpretation. That's the point of the question. Yeah.
Well, I can only speak for myself that, you know, you never finish what you're doing, and right. You're always growing and you're always changing. And as long as you're learning something and you're having fun doing it, I think that's it.
Cool. No, that's definitely a good answer. What was that?
And I didn't even practice. I made it up just as we were saying. I know it sounded
perfect. Cool. So if there's nothing else you want to add, I think it's a good place to put a pin in it.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. It's again, I'm working on the second issue. It'll be out sometime early next year. And the first issue is available for free.
Right. Again, that email address again for people?
visitationscomicbook@gmail.com.
Cool.
Do you guys have show notes and stuff like that?
Yeah. This will all be in the description of the episode.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Your links to your stuff and the email address as well.
Are there any images that you'd like me to send over for you?
All of them.
Definitely an image of the comic you were describing, and if there's any, you know, image you like to use, like if you have a headshot that you like, or image you like. Cool.
Okay, that sounds great.
All right. So for everyone listening at home, thanks for listening, and as always, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good one. Cool. And we're clear.